computer. I was reading in the current issue of Tricycle, a Buddhist magazine, last weekend, and one of the contributors just had a very simple sentence about how having a binary or dualistic perspective on ourselves, on life, whatever, how it can be a violent experience. And I hadn't thought about dualistic thinking or binary thinking as violent, but I've been in, you know, been in that, certainly walked around the edges of it and maybe called it different things. But it really struck me, for some reason, that when we are in that very black and white thinking, about ourselves, about others, about life, whatever, that it often can have a very violent energy feel to it, a very aggressive one. And I think that for many of us, coming from perhaps dysfunction and trauma, all sorts of things that engender fear, that we can put up these walls around us by way of protection and armor, our hearts and our minds. And so when something is troubling us or takes us to the edge of our comfort zone, at least for me, a lot of times very reactive, strong and intense feelings and thoughts can come up, and they can have a very violent, aggressive energy to them, and they can be actually very painful. So when I sent out the notice for this month's meeting, I was conscious of the fact of the quote that I selected, which was, meditation practice isn't about trying to throw ourselves away and become something better. It's about befriending who we are already. The ground of practice is you or me or whoever we are right now, just as we are. That's the ground. That's what we study. That's what we come to know with tremendous curiosity and interest. Meditation is a totally nonviolent, non-aggressive occupation. Although in my early years of meditating, I found it to be an opportunity to bring up all kinds of violent, self-critical thoughts. And I think that's the general field that I wanted to kind of address tonight, is the type of violence that we do to ourselves with all of our endless self-criticism and judging. We do it to other people, but its genesis is always with ourselves. Sometimes I think that self-doubt in the extreme can also be a form of violence. It can become so painful that we doubt ourselves that much, so much, that lack of trust and confidence in ourselves, that lack of relationship with ourselves can have violent energy to it. So this, hearing this was like hearing something that I've heard before, but hearing it kind of with fresh ears in a way. And while we do this in life in general, right, it's kind of an automatic mechanism where we tend to sort out our experiences, internal or external, good, bad, like, dislike, love, hate, black, white, this very, very binary, dualistic thinking. Both our program of recovery and the practice of mindfulness is actually trying to help us obviate that, to really to find other ways of perceiving ourselves and working with the energy of those sorts of thoughts and perceptions and working with our feelings. for me, when I get into those states these days, and it was a state that I think I lived in pretty constantly from a young age until several years into my recovery and practice, it really did have this feeling of like my feelings or my heart or my mind kind of being smashed up against a solid wall, right? There's no escape. There are no other options. There's only one way of perceiving something. And for me, as for most of us, it comes out of really habituated reactivity to whatever usually our early experiences were in the karmic crucible of our lives, i.e. our families that we were born into, that have taught us so many lessons, I'm sure, and continue to. And we carry it forward, right? We carry it forward. And certainly, when I was active in my addiction, that was my only way of perceiving things, was really in a very black or white type of way. Yes or no. There was no way of actually seeing shades of gray or white or even other colors. And as I acknowledged for myself and said a moment ago, a lot of these very painful walls of dualistic perception and thinking that we put around ourselves have their genesis in things that started out as being really, you know, survival techniques, right? For trauma, for the fear that we felt, whatever. But as we got older and went forward with our lives and certainly getting into addiction, unexamined, they just kind of increased in strength and in frequency of perception. And I think we still have a tendency, I mean, I've been doing this for a while, and I still have a tendency to do this, to sort out my life in this way. And not only does it have this sense of aggressive energy sometimes, especially when it gets down to something where judgment is coming forward for myself or others, but it also has a way of really fragmenting my fundamental experience, right? Over in this corner, good, over in this corner, bad, over in this corner, happy, over in this corner, sad. Or as many of you know, since my approach to life was through a kind of like a spreadsheet and all of the cells, you know, just putting life into little containers and experiences into little containers, as opposed to it all being of a piece and it all having just an energetic flow that I could live with. Pema Chodron says that her teacher, the most wonderful and infamous Trungpa Rinpoche, said that practice includes, to a very large degree, laying aside our neurotic crimes. And I love that. I love that phrase. And of course, you know, this is coming from the 60s and the 70s, you know, in Trungpa's era. But these neurotic crimes, these crimes of that are, you know, unhealthy from a psychological perspective, these habit energies that can come about out of our neuroses, and they become neurotic after a while. Certainly for me, they did. But by that, I think that what he's really meaning and what he's talking about and pointing toward is that situations arise constantly in our lives, right? Life is very dynamic, life is very rich, very full. And each situation brings with it a certain, or brings forth a certain type of energy. And depending upon what that energy is, and depending upon what our storehouse is of habit energy, it can erupt into some really painful types of experiences in our mind, in our heart, in our body. And that a lot of what practice is in this laying aside of our neurotic crimes is actually learning to harmonize with the energy of every situation in our life as it arises. Whether we judge it initially as good or bad, happy, sad, whatever. It's really coming into presence and connection with that energy, but also having the basic stability, the broad internal capacity, and the variable tool set, or a tool set, in order to respond appropriately for ourselves and for others to whatever the energy of that particular situation is. So most of us, you know, I know for me, when I really get feeling threatened, fear comes up or whatnot, it's very easy to fall back into patterns of intense reactivity. And when I do, what I personally experience is not that flow of life. I don't even feel the spaciousness of a spreadsheet cell. It just all kind of comes clamoring down, instantly descends upon me, hijacks my heart, mind, and body, and immediately I think it's true. whatever my reaction is when it's that intense, I hate you, I hate this situation, I'm not good enough, I made a stupid mistake, oh my God, and I'm just slimed with it, right? And there's no way that I can see anything else. And it's a very painful situation. It's a very, very painful experience when that is our experience. So we all know this to varying degrees. Perhaps we know this most intensely from when we reflect on our active addictive lives, right? I mean, for myself, you know, it really didn't matter. Here was my reflex, for the most part, unhappy, drink, happy, drink, sad, drink, things are going well, drink, things are going badly, drink, right? You know, it was just such a limited and dark and unfortunate palette. And we can look at that now, right? Which we do, and we can reflect on our own limited abilities. And we can see that we have actually changed and developed more capacity. So I think that there is, you know, this is why I say recovery is a wisdom tradition, because through the structure of all of the aspects of our many recovery programs, we actually learn a different response and a different way to deal with the energy of situations in our lives that used to cause us to pull out the gallon of ice cream, pull out the joint, pour a glass of scotch or wine or whatever, you know, crazy relationship or whatnot, or credit card that was part of our behavioral package, right? And so recovery, I bow down, I truly bow down to the wisdom of recovery that helps me consciously and unconsciously through just the way that the program is structured, meetings and steps and fellowship and study to actually learn, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, to stay with the energy of my life that used to scare me to death and cause me to go into that immediate reactive addictive response. So I say this because, one, I want to honor our recovery traditions, but it gives us such a basis, a leg up in many ways, for then continuing the work that we do, right, in our program, and as we move into practices of becoming awake, of cultivating wisdom and compassion and mindfulness, and we shine the light on more and more aspects of ourselves, we already have this built in. We already have this experience of learning how to harmonize with difficult and challenging energy. In Buddhist teachings, we learn similar. We similarly learn ways to deal with the energy of life, the energy of other people, the energy of challenging situations. And we learn not to be distracted by that initial conditioned response, or to be persuaded by it. Oh, come hither. You know, one of the things that we learn when we really pay attention to this stuff is how most of the times we have a great fondness for a lot of our initial habitual responses, right? There's something really, in a body sense, about feeling wronged by somebody and then really disliking them, right? Oh my goodness, this person harmed me. And there's something a little bit delicious about it at first, right? But with awareness, we work through that to the next insight. So in Buddhism, and particularly in meditation, we're given the opportunity to cultivate awareness. The way that recovery helps us to cultivate awareness about our relationship to our substance and how we use that to soothe, to smooth over. Buddhism allows us to look at this in a wider field in terms of all the types of suffering that we experience, all the various types of energetic situations that bring forth suffering. So much like a first step, it starts with awareness, right? We sit down. We sit down, we sit still, and we just kind of see what happens. Sometimes we start off, of course, looking for, you know, wonderful enlightenment experiences. And if we hang around long enough, we realize that those are wonderful, but perhaps few and far between. What we really get to do is we get to settle into our lives, and we get to let our lives settle into us. For many of you, you might have been like me, where my whole experience and relationship with life happened up here. So the actual physical aspect, the embodiment of sitting still, allowed my whole body to come online, to be part of my experience, and to soothe a lot of that trauma, that fear, that was the reactivity that I experienced was rooted in my body. And if you sit calmly and you sit still with others or with yourself, you know, something happens to our body. The energy changes. Body to body practice is incredible. One, we get to trust being with other people, which was an issue for me, sitting in silence, trusting other people. And then there's just a collective wisdom and intention to heal and soothe that gets passed through our permeable bodies, one by one. So first thing is awareness, sitting in meditation. And in meditation, what we can watch is how our thoughts and feelings are often very binary, very dualistic, very violent, and we can bring gentle, loving attention to them. We can bring curiosity. But one of the things that Trungpa advised was that it was very helpful for him, and this is what he suggested to his students, is to also acknowledge that whatever particular heightened emotion or thought that we are experiencing, that we say to ourselves, wait a second, that's not me. That's not me. That immediately puts a little bit of separation in and breaks the hold that reactivity can have on us. And in taking the backward step, which we repeatedly do, which is also built into our recovery program in the fourth step, right? In the 10th step, in taking that backward step, we start pushing back on the immediate experience that otherwise we feel, you know, we're just pressed up against, and we start getting some space. And then we can start walking around the perimeter of whatever it is we've experienced mentally, emotionally, physically. And with curiosity, start to explore what's going on, inquire as to what's going on. Oh, start seeing, there it is again. There's that fear that you have. Oh, there you have that fear again. Oh, do you still need to have that fear? You know, X years of sobriety and decades away from a particular situation, in space, in quiet, grounded, stable space, a lot of things can happen. And as Thich Nhat Hanh says, as I often quote, all healing begins with awareness, and meditation puts us in the way of having that opportunity to have these sorts of insights and start to cultivate a new relationship with a lot of that habit energy that we carry around in our body. And we get to see, oh, that is suffering, and we get to identify it as suffering, as opposed to just saying, that's life. One big paintbrush, there it is, it's all life, it's sucky and it's unfair and anything else we might think. We can say, oh no, that's suffering, that's a facet, that's something I get to look at. To take things apart, to get to a more granular level, as opposed to, in a binary way, clumping it all together and saying it's one single thing. So one of the other things that Buddhism offers into these situations is a high regard for and an encouragement to practice patience. I mean, my habit energies, many of them have calmed down, thank God, for my sake and for yours. But many of them have a long tail, and many of them, you know, feel like they're kind of out of my energetic space, and others feel like, you know, they're still there. They're just not as vibrant or prominent as they used to be. So with patience, I get to learn, start this process of relaxing. I mean, so much more can happen when our bodies are relaxed, our hearts and our minds are open, our stomach muscles, our belly muscles are smoother than if it's all clenched, right? But I get an opportunity to reframe this experience. I get a chance to not only see what's going on, but I get a chance to reframe what's actually happening. I get to ask, oh, somebody said something to me. Did they really mean to insult me and cut me to the bone? Did they really mean to leave me out? And I get to, with patience, to look into situations that are often very, very complex, but my limited, intense habit energy doesn't know that they're complex. They just get the signal that, you know, we don't like it or whatnot, and so immediately go to the extreme. But I actually get, with patience, to kind of unravel it like a huge knotted ball of yarn. I get to slowly pull all of the strings out and get it so that the strings line up. It's a single string, and I can roll it back into a neater ball. And I get to develop more capacity for things. It puts something in. It puts some space in between a situation and my reaction. And I am reminded in Buddhist practice, as I am reminded over and over again in our recovery practice, that situations are workable, which is, when habit energy descends on me, the last thing I think is that this situation is workable, or that this emotion will ever change, or a judgment that I have about somebody is going to stay, right? Or a rupture in a relationship. I will just think it is so unworkable, right? That's that wall again. And that situation, that person, that feeling, whatever, gets put on the other side of an impenetrable wall. But I get to be reminded that things are workable. I get to see that my unmanageable, unworkable life that was fueled by all of my substances has now become very workable. That gives me a great amount of confidence and inspiration and trust. And I get to see, as I work with Buddhist teachings, especially things like right view, right? Do I really understand the whole situation? You know, do I really know what's going on here? I get to remember, to experience going through my perceptions of something in a much more mature way that allows for complexity. And I get to see how situations have changed. And my reactions and my ability and my skill has changed. And that's a really good thing to be reminded of too, when we're dealing with very intense habit energy that can bring forth violent responses. So, where am I? There I am. So both of these wisdom traditions show us that, one, we really have the ability to bring our wisdom forward and to actually have greater insight into a situation that used to or might still cause us initially a lot of intense reaction, mentally, emotionally, or physically. And it reminds, both remind us that we have choice. We don't always have to give in to the habit energy, to the reactivity. And with awareness and putting more space in between that, and with awareness between reaction and embodiment, we actually have more and more opportunity to make those choices between reactivity as opposed to choosing skillful, compassionate actions. And we get to see how these choices that we make, one day at a time, 1 year at a time, one moment at a time, not to drink, not to use food, not to use sex, not to use credit cards, actually add up, right? And make our lives very, very different in time. So the little pieces that we do in terms of working with habit energy do matter. They do add up in the aggregate to help us change out of patterns of suffering into patterns of liberation and non-suffering. So when you notice some very intense feeling, mental or emotional or physical, notice the energy of it. Notice the, does it have violence? Does it have a sense of aggression to it? Especially if it is something that's between you and yourself. And I frame it this way in particular because I think that's where so much of our suffering comes from, is by this low-level conversation that we tend to have with ourselves, where we're constantly judging ourselves. And if we tune in and listen to that constant radio station or channel or whatever, we'll pick up on a lot of the unskillfulness of that, right? So listen to it and notice, are you doing violence to yourself? And it really can be something, you know, oh, you are such a stupid idiot at a high voice, but it also can be very subtle and very insidious. So you have to listen, very, very carefully. But notice it. Breathe with it. Breathe into it. Breathe through it. And maybe offer, maybe remember once or twice to offer some intention to change it. May this intense experience that I am having be an opportunity for me to heal from this. If it's something between if it's a sense of violence and rupture in a relationship, may this negativity that's happening right now be a link to both of us waking up more. Intention changes, turns everything around and changes it from the truth to aspirational, intentional living, to be more skillful, to be more compassionate, to be wiser, to self and to others. Remember, you have a choice, and remember that the more often you choose to be on the side of non-reactivity, to be on the side of kindness, to be on the side of choice, the stronger your ability is going to be going forward to make choices that don't involve personal violence or violence to others. So I think I will stop there.